Hello, and welcome to the sixth episode of Season 3 of The Dark Money Files, in which we shine a light into a murky world. I'm Ray Blake, and with me is my co-host, friend and business partner, Graham Barrow. Hello, Graham.
Hello, Ray.
Last time, Graham, we looked at the mutual evaluation reports conducted under the aegis of FATF, the Financial Action Task Force. And that was timely because you were about to attend the FATF plenary session in Paris.
That's right, Ray. And no sooner had I got back than Swedbank updated the market with their third quarter results, which contained some insights into their, well, continuing internal inquiries into their exposure to the laundromat activities in the Baltic states.
Yes, we reported on the first phase of their investigation when the details were published back in March. I remember I spent a thrilling morning going through the report line by line and coming away distinctly underwhelmed with the scope and rigour.
I remember it well, Ray. And are you still underwhelmed?
No, I'm not, Graham. Swedbank seem to have changed their approach.
In what way?
They've zoomed out, Graham.
Oh, you'll have to explain what you mean, Ray.
I will. Let's go back to March. You'll remember I jumped on the Phase 1 report as soon as it was released, and we got a podcast out the same day.
Yes, we were pretty critical of their approach.
We criticised their sole focus on determining whether the 50 entities that the broadcaster, SVT, had linked them with were indeed their clients, whether if so, they'd off-boarded any of them and when, and whether they'd continue to transact for them after having purportedly off-boarded them.
Yeah, we thought those should have been really simple questions to answer, but that there were a number of other, to us, obvious questions that were being ignored. As I recall, this turned into a chorus of disapproval that led to the CEO at the time leaving the bank under a cloud.
And now, it emerges, she wasn't alone.
Really? Okay, let's come back to that.
Okay.
But I remember that the Phase 1 report set out a more ambitious scope for Phase 2 of the investigation.
That's right, Graham. And in these third quarter results, we're getting our first insight into what's going on with that.
Oh, that's good. Tell us all.
The new CEO, Jens Henriksen, introduces the report 3 weeks into his new role and immediately addresses the AML issues. It's actually the first topic of substance he addresses in his introductory comments. And he says, firstly, we have to get to the bottom of the money laundering accusations against our bank and address the shortcomings in our AML work. Not only because of the ongoing investigations, but because it's the right thing to do. In concrete terms, it means I will be spending much of my time making sure that the internal investigation is completed promptly and that the authorities have access to all the information they need to complete their investigations. It also means strengthening the bank's work to fight financial crime by allocating more resources and improving our processes.
Well, there's a lot there, but it is pretty much what you'd expect him to say, Ray.
Well, yes, Graham, but I think it's significant that it's the issue he's chosen to put front and centre.
And that's fair enough. There's more detail, I imagine, later in the report.
There is, Graham. Let me direct you to page 10 and the heading Update on Ongoing Investigations.
OK, give me a second. OK, I'm there. Yeah, there's quite a long section here, isn't there?
Yes, there is. It leads on the work of the new Anti-Financial Crime Unit.
Which it says was only set up in April this year. That seems a bit recent, doesn't it?
Well, yes.
So what does it say about the investigations? And when they say investigations, how many are they talking about?
Well, there are surprises here, Graham. We knew, of course, about their own internal investigation, which Clifford Chance is conducting for them. And we knew about some external investigations by regulators. But there's quite a long list of investigations referenced in this update.
Well, yes, I can see that as well as investigations by the Swedish and Estonian regulators, which are due to finish in the new year, they also disclose investigations by the Latvian Police Department for Combating Economic Crime, the European Central Bank, and the Swedish Economic Crime Authority.
Now, that last one, Graham, is specifically looking at whether Swedbank employees have violated communication laws related to money laundering.
Ooh, and what does that mean, Ray?
I can only speculate, Graham.
Then speculate on, Ray, speculate on.
Well, I think this could be interpreted as communication to law enforcement through suspicious activity reports.
Oh, so this might be an investigation into whether there were failures to report?
Yes, although that's just conjecture until there's more information.
Noted. But of course it might also be about the communications Swedbank made to the markets early on about the scale and indeed existence of money laundering problems.
Fair point, Graham. Still conjecture, though.
It is. But there is an explosive sentence here, eh?
Oh?
Well, it says, quote, a number of US authorities are also currently investigating Swedbank. These investigations may take years to conclude.
Oh, yes, that one.
Do we know which US authorities, Ray?
No, Graham, we don't. Henriksen was specifically asked in the Q&A session whether this included the US Department of Justice, and he declined to answer.
Well, no doubt more detail will emerge in due course.
I expect so, but there's one more interesting thing we do know now.
And what's that?
I'm going to quote directly. Quote, as a consequence of the internal investigation, a number of employees have had to leave the bank, unquote.
Ooh, what, because they were involved in the illicit activity or because they negligently failed to address it?
We don't know, but the phraseology doesn't really allow much beyond those two possible interpretations, does it?
No, it doesn't. But actually, this is going to be a bit of an issue for Swedbank, isn't it?
What do you mean?
Well, if people are leaving the organisation, and for whatever reason, they're taking historical knowledge with them. The CEO is not yet a month into the job, and his top team are all pretty recent too. The AFC unit is barely 6 months established. Ray, we've been in banks needing to investigate historical matters, and you know how hard it is to interpret contemporaneous records without input from people who were there at the time and knew the systems and procedures from then.
That's right, Graham. And we know from our own work that firms often fall foul of the regulators when they have to rely on institutional memory because, historically, record-keeping may not have been consistently up to scratch.
Yeah, and when you're not talking just about a single internal investigation, but multiple independent investigations as well, all of which will have their own information requests, the bank's going to really struggle to keep all the investigators informed when it is short of institutional memory itself.
And we know that information requests from the authorities come with non-negotiable deadlines, so they will have to be giving that priority over their internal investigation.
Very true, Ray. I mean, we were very critical of the narrow scope of their initial investigation. Has that opened up a bit?
It certainly has, Graham. They've really zoomed out, in fact.
Oh, how do you mean?
Well, the report says that in total, more than 30 billion transactions made between 2007 and March 2019 are being reviewed, of which 15 billion from the Baltic operations.
Did you say 30 billion, Ray? That is billion with a B?
I did, Graham.
I'm speechless, Ray.
Well, I very much doubt that, but you're right. It's an astonishing number. I did some rough calculations that show that if each transaction takes an average of just 60 seconds to review, to get through them all represents around 200,000 man-years of work.
Well, I can believe it. So when are they planning to conclude this work, Ray?
Early next year, Graham.
Well, now I really am speechless.
Well, I've no doubt they'll have some fairly whizzy tech to do much of the heavy lifting.
I'm sure they will, Ray, but if they're only looking at individual transactions, even 30 billion of them, are they missing out on seeing bigger patterns that only emerge when you look at a network of transactions where each individual payment on its own just might look innocuous?
Well, I think we'll have to see what the next update says, Graham.
Indeed. Well, let's keep an eye on this one. But for now, it looks like the bank has at least learned from past mistakes and going forward is going to be more open and look at itself more widely.
Yes, that's encouraging. And we will keep listeners up to date. Now, Graham, I'm very eager to hear about your time with the FATF.
Well, Ray, oddly, there's a theme that we can use to tie this back to Swedbank.
Really?
Well, yes, as you said, Swedbank have really zoomed out in their investigation to look at the bigger picture. And one of the key themes I picked up at the plenary was the need for FATF to do something similar.
What, completely review the global AML framework by early next year?
No, Ray. I mean, but I do mean perform a review of the way that the mutual evaluation reports are currently working to see if they are still fit for purpose.
Well, I guess you'd better start by explaining exactly why you were there and who you were with.
Good idea. Well, I was there as a guest of Transparency International, who'd brought together experts from civil society organisations, or CSOs, and beyond, to hold a side meeting in Paris at the same time as the FATF plenary, partly to protest about being excluded from the deliberations, either as a contributor or as an observer, and partly to demonstrate that CSOs have a great deal to contribute to the debate about how best to manage the battle against financial crime.
And did they?
Yes. I think between us we had a range of great ideas which I think would make a real impact.
Do you want to start with your own contribution?
Well, okay. Well, firstly, I worry that MER's mutual evaluation reports are unitary in approach, by which I mean they focus exclusively on individual countries, whereas, you know, we know that high-end money laundering, laundromats, if you will, are highly multi-jurisdictional. And I think the outcome of that is that the MERs miss a trick.
What would be your suggestion to address that?
Well, Ray, as you know, here in the UK, the FCA performs both individual firm visits as well as thematic reviews. That means they look at risk both within specific firms and across a variety of different firms, because only that way can they assess the broad risks facing the financial services industry.
And you think that the FATF should do the same thing, continue with country-specific evaluations, but also do thematic reviews across different countries to see how their controls interact or whether there are loopholes which criminals could arbitrage to their benefit.
Exactly. And as one of my colleagues at the meeting pointed out, the in-country evaluations don't always have to be across the entirety of the 40 recommendations.
Well, no. They could adopt a risk-based approach so that where there was no reason to suppose that previously well-received elements had changed, they could focus on just those bits that had.
Which they already do to a degree with what they call follow-up reports, but I think the whole approach just could be much smarter, especially when they're dealing with smaller, less systemically important countries, which have, you know, frankly, neither the budgets nor the expertise to prepare for a visit in the same way as some of the bigger, more developed countries, which can throw huge resources at them.
That all makes complete sense to me. What was your other point?
Well, that unlike the requirement for countries to adopt a risk-based approach, the FATF doesn't. I made the point at the meeting that a small lack of compliance in some of the recommendations in a country like the UK, which, you know, is a major player in international finance.
And money laundering.
Indeed. And that can have a much greater impact than a significant deficiency in a country like, say, Uganda, which, and I mean no offence to the Ugandans, is not a significant presence on the international financial stage.
You know, that makes a lot of sense. Getting a non-compliant or partially compliant rating does not in itself tell you very much about the impact of that rating in the war on financial crime.
No, it's like running a project. Identifying risks is important, but unless you assess the likelihood of those risks crystallising and the impact of those risks on the project if they do, you're not adding very much to your overall risk management.
You know, you're absolutely right, Graham. And the difference between a largely compliant and a partially compliant can have far-reaching consequences in respect to the country concerned.
Exactly. And the other thing that struck me was a point that one of my colleagues at the meeting made in respect of risk assessments.
Oh?
Well, yeah, risk assessments tend to measure inward risk, by which I mean the risk that countries face from outside coming in. Should they not also include outward-facing risk, the risk that those countries export out into the financial system?
What, do you mean like the fact that the UK provides legal entities which are used all over the world to facilitate money laundering?
Yes, exactly.
You know, Graham, I don't think the UK would have emerged quite as well from its recent MER if the FATF had adopted a risk-based approach and measured outward-facing risks.
Yeah, you know, that might not have been a bad thing in the long run.
I agree. So what happens next in this respect?
Well, I think the recommendations we put together will be put into a paper and presented to the FATF. And I also know that Tom Keating at the Royal United Services Institute, RUSI, has just recently written very compellingly about the case for reform.
An article which you can read on the RUSI website.
Exactly.
And what's next for us, Graham?
Well, Ray, there's a very interesting Panorama documentary which is being broadcast today as we speak, which is the 28th of October, looking at how billions of pounds of drug money, some of which is collected here in the UK, ends up being laundered through the gold markets of Dubai.
That does sound very interesting. Any reason for you saying so?
Well, yeah, unless I ended up on the cutting room floor, and that, frankly, is quite possible, I believe I'm going to make an appearance in that programme.
Wow. Well, whether you do or whether you don't, is it worth talking about the programme in next week's podcast?
I think it is.
I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dark Money Files. We hope you enjoyed it. If you would like to listen to future episodes, please subscribe through iTunes, Spotify, or your normal podcast provider. Thanks.